Hi, I'm Kevin Hardy, former All-Pro linebacker for the Jacksonville Jaguars, along with future All-Pro linebacker Miles Jack and P&G Sweepstakes Do Make the Pick winner Michael Garcia.
With the 103rd pick of the 2016 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Sheldon Day, defensive tackle, Notre Dame.
One of the best defensive linemen in the country, senior from Indianapolis, two-time captain at Notre Dame. There have been only 21 players in the history of... Swoops feeling the pressure, steps up and down he goes. That was Isaac Rochelle and Sheldon Day right in his grill.
Sheldon Day just throws his man to the side and gets through quarterback.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
They call him Topical Tyler Devin because he's always on point with the new open. Sheldon Day, welcome to the fold. He signs his contract with the Jacksonville Jaguars yesterday. We'll talk about where he fits in the defensive line. Tony, I made a faux pas, one of many that I make, but the first of the day that I am aware of at least. And in tweeting out the question of the day, I put the wrong year.
Oh, we're looking way forward.
Yes. I said, how much have your 2017 expectations for the Jags changed since the start of the offseason? That is the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships question of the day. And only one person so far had caught it and said, really? 2017? So I will retweet out the 2016 question. You knew what I was talking about, I hope. Anyway, and if you didn't, you played along perfectly, for the most part. All right. And also, we've got the Twitter poll up. If you go to @MD_1010XL, I know Tony retweeted it. I think Tyler did as well. We're asking you in a little Twitter poll, one click, just tell us how many wins you're expecting for the Jags this year. And I'm kind of trying to combine the two ideas here. Where were we, Tony, at the beginning of the offseason? Where are we now as far as this Jacksonville Jaguar team goes? And I think I've probably added about two wins to my expected total. And you maybe go around the National Football League and you find every single fan base, or 25 out of 32 fan bases feel like they've added two wins. And we know that math-wise, you cannot do that around the National Football League. Not everybody can improve by that much. So we'll find out if those expectations are right, but we're going to talk about that today. Where they started, where were you at the beginning of the offseason? You think, oh boy, this is a 500 club at best, and are you more bullish on them now? Or, you know, I've had some people, first guy to respond and said, is Gus Bradley still coaching? If so, the ceiling is six wins. So, hey, wherever you're at, that's the kind of feedback we're looking for, because as Prosser pointed out a minute ago, they're basically done. I mean, they may add a piece. I'm not saying they're going to add Dwight Freeney. I think it's incredibly unlikely that they would. From Freeney's perspective, I don't know if he'd want to come here because he's talking about playing for an established winner. At least that's the way I read his comments. But wherever you're at on that, share your thoughts with us today at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler on Twitter, on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, and also at 641-1010. Let's get some calls going today. Just talk about the offseason additions and how that's changed your outlook. Where were you in January, say 2 weeks after the season ended and the dust settled, looking ahead, and you put those last couple losses of the season a little bit in the rearview mirror and got a little space emotionally to get away from those. Where were you then? Where are you now? How much has it gone up or down? Or are you still in neutral on wherever your expectations were a few months ago? So share your thoughts with us on that, and then weigh in on the Twitter poll as well, at MD_1010XL, and the Jags' actual victory total this year. 641-1010. Phone lines will be open to you throughout the course of the day. We will talk about Sheldon Day coming up and where he fits in now that he's got the contract signed. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you on this Tuesday morning at 1010XL World Headquarters on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, if you'd like to get in today, 641-1010, both on the phone line and the text line, driven by Duval Ford. You know all the social media angles to it. Answer either question. Have your expectations changed for 2016 or 2017? If you want to follow my mistyped tweet, that's fine. You can go that way if you want to. I like this, though. You know, you may get some of this. Eric Harris, eHarris79 on Twitter. Honestly, not a lot in terms of expectations, because I expected the defense to be addressed and the team to be better, and that hasn't changed. So he was saying, look, my expectations were they were going to go out and throw some big money at guys, spend a lot of their draft capital on that side of the football, Tony, and they've done that. So I expected that to have happened, and they have followed through. And that makes sense to me. You know, I mean, you didn't go into the offseason thinking no additions were going to be made, but you can never know how successful or unsuccessful a draft class will be or a free agent signing period will be in terms of the guys you target. How many were you able to land? Really, the only guy who got away this offseason is Olivier Vernon. And in either picture, it seems like right now, of any consequence in free agency and the draft. 6-4-1-10-10. Let's get Steve on the south side to get things rolling this morning here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Steve. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I overheard what you said a little while ago about us being done picking. You know, we have all of our players except for maybe one or two. I think that you always need to look for better players. I think that 80% of our team is unproven talent, and that includes Blake Bortles. He has not proved anything yet. I mean, he's going to be a good quarterback, hopefully, but he hasn't proved anything. So I just don't want to see too much confidence yet until they get out in the field and prove something.
But that's up to every individual fan. I mean, it doesn't – as long as the players aren't overconfident, I don't think the players are going to say, oh, yeah, we're great. We've shown you anything. You know, I think – fans are fans, and they're going to, you know, have expectations whether you think they should or not. And I understand what you're saying. None of this really matters until they go and win. They play 16 games. How many are they going to win? That's the measuring stick that you judge a football team on. But we're in May, so we can't know that right now. So all we're looking at is, you know, the groundwork that they put in. And you know, Tony, in terms of – I thought Steve was going to go down the direction of – you know, this roster needs to continuously be tinkered with. And I think he led with that. But then he mentioned Blake Bortles. You know, he's unproven. Okay, yeah, but you're not changing the roster at quarterback. The roster's set at the quarterback position. The three guys, if all three of them make the roster, are here already in Blake Bortles, Chad Henne, and Brandon Allen. Boom, done. And maybe Brandon Allen's on the practice squad. Maybe he's on the 53. But that's your pool of quarterbacks. So you're not adding to it. Now, does he have more to prove? Of course he does. He's not a perfect player.
I don't necessarily think that means he's unproven. I think he's got more that he needs to be able to do.
More to do.
But that doesn't mean unproven. I mean, it's been shown last year that Blake Bortles is good enough to win football games for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, he still has enough flaws that they lost some games where Blake could have helped them win last year as well. So I think there's more that he needs to do. And, look, we've talked about this for the last couple weeks. I think the key word for me this offseason with the offense is consistency. And it's finding some way where you're not watching halves or three quarters of a game going, where is the offense right now? And it would disappear entirely, it felt like, at times in games last year. And I don't think you can afford to have that again this season where you had to wait till the two-minute warning, basically when they would put them in that hurry up, and that's when Blake would really take off inside these football games. I think that needs to change this year, and I think that does change if they can find a little bit more in the running game, if he can find a little bit more consistency with his completion percentage, maybe some of the interception numbers come down. I certainly think there are ways that he can improve his game, but I don't know that he's an unproven player.
You can look at it any way you want. If you want to say he hasn't proven he can win games consistently at the NFL level, he's certainly cost the Jags some game. Whether he's not the sole reason they've lost particular games, but he may have been a main contributing factor with some of the pick sixes that he threw, right? So maybe if you want to look at Blake and say he hasn't proven he can be a consistent winner in the league because the team hasn't been winning games, right? I mean, he's
sure
got talent, and he can throw for a lot of yards, and he can make some big plays, and he can do all that, but I don't think the jury is completely in or out. Which one would
in.
It be?
In? Jury right. In.
Is the jury in on Blake? I think it's still out, right?
The jury's out.
It's still out.
And
right
look,
now.
I think that's fair.
Deliberate.
I also think I look at what happened in the 2015 season, and I think the bigger issues this football team had were on the defensive side of the ball and not necessarily with Blake Bortles and what was going on at the quarterback position. Do I wish he would have been able to overcome how bad they were on defense for another game or two? Yeah, but I don't put it on Blake necessarily as a second-year quarterback that he wasn't there yet. I have confidence that Blake Bortles is going to be there. Now, some people, if they want to take more of that glass-half-empty view on what happened with all that, that's fine, and I can understand why they would. I am certainly glass-half-full and actually more than half-full on Blake Bortles and what I think he's going to be at the quarterback position for this football team.
And I am as well, but I totally get the position if you want to say that I'm still withholding final judgment because, I mean, Peyton Manning 2 years in had shown you enough that he was probably on track to become a really, really good player, but he had a lot of flaws. He was throwing a ton of interceptions, and he needed to, you know, the Peyton Manning of the first 5 years of his career and, say, the middle 7 years of his career or whatever, however, it might be at five or seven, I might be off by a year or so, but his peak 5 or 6 year window compared to his first 5 years, he got exponentially better despite being pretty good in that first five.
My question would be, are there a bunch of guys that you can think of that 2 years into their career you felt as good as you do about Blake Bortles that turned out to be nothing? Is there a list of guys that I just don't know about in the history of this league where 2 years into their career you're watching this offense start to bloom?
RG3.
Well, that was one. Yeah. And that was an injury. That was an ACL and then a broken ankle. And if that kind of stuff happens to Blake Bortles, there's nothing you can do about it.
Understood, but you wonder, you know, I mean, I don't want to get spun off into a whole side thing, but the RG3 thing, you could have questioned, will his style of play be able to hold up in the National Football League?
Right.
And you could say, well, the injury is proof that it wouldn't hold up because he exposed himself to too many hits with his body type and all that. But, look, there are probably a few other examples. I get your point, dude. I'm not trying to throw water on it.
No, I'm seriously asking the question because I can't think of those guys, you know, that we really did feel good about 2-3 years into their career.
Good about 2 or 3 years in.
I mean, it's a big enough body of work now that you have an idea.
On a smaller scale, how'd you feel about Leftwich early on?
I was always just okay. I was never really confident that Byron Leftwich was going to carry this team.
I put it, certainly Blake Bortles setting the franchise touchdown mark like he did last year, the yardage mark, has accomplished more statistically than Byron did. I remember Byron coming in against Buffalo that first game, Tony.
That was something.
We're like, wow, this guy's got it. You know what I mean? And granted, small sample size. There are probably a few others out there, though, that
Byron in his first 2 years started 27 games, passed for 5,700 yards, 29 touchdowns, and 26 picks.
Okay. What was the TD to interception each of the years?
Each year, year one was 14-16, and year two was 15-10. So improvement.
So significant improvement.
Absolutely.
In the right direction. You know, and look, again, I'm not saying I felt the same way about Byron. I'm just trying to think of an example. And,
no, I get you.
An example close to the franchise, obviously, is you're not going to find a better one than that. Boy, I'm trying to. You got me going now. I'm trying to think if other quarterbacks that had a meteoric start and a big fall off after a couple of years, not due to injury. I'll ponder that one because I'm sure there are a few out there. But
I'm sure there are.
I get your point. But Vince Young, someone just said on the text line,
that's a good one.
Driven by Duval Ford. That is a good Vince Young, by the way. I believe what 31-19 as a starter. 62% winning percentage.
He's been good.
That's pretty good. It's easy to remember, because at least I believe those are the numbers, because it was exactly a 50-game sample. Is that what it was, 31-19?
Vince was a weird dude, though.
He was a weird dude, but he was Rookie of the Year. You could argue, should he have been Rookie of the Year? He was Rookie of the Year, right? Not Reggie Bush. I think it was Vince Young.
Yeah, he was Rookie of the Year because it was at the Rookie of the Year like award thing that he said he contemplated retiring after his first year in the league.
Right.
And it was like, what?
You gotta have more tequila time, man.
Shirtless tequila time. What is he talking about?
Kidding?
Then he disappeared during the Monday night game.
I'll say this. McManus and I had him on back when we were doing the Rumble back in the day. I still have Rumble collector's items in my garage. I had a lot of Rumble bottle openers left over. Anyway, we had him on, and Vince Young, I thought, came off extremely well. You know, came off very smart. Very humble, very gracious, all these things. That doesn't mean anything, you know. I'm just saying he gave off a very good impression. Kaepernick, that's a great one. That is a
Kaepernick's
great one.
A really good one.
That's an outstanding one. Thank you, Ed, on the text line, driven by Duval 4. That is right on the nose. Another one for Kaepernick. Couple of quick votes for Kaepernick and Roe. That's great. I mean, we debated Kaepernick versus Russell Wilson a couple of years ago, right? And I actually was on the Kaepernick side. This was might have been at right after the Super Bowl run, because that was his second year, right? Took him to the brink of winning it. Matt Schaub, I wouldn't put Matt Schaub in that category, because remember, Matt Schaub was a backup in Atlanta for a few years, and he got flipped to Houston, I want to say, for like a second-round draft pick, right? And then once he got in, he played okay and you know, had a couple of pretty good years. I think one year he might have led the league in touchdown passes or yards.
Yards.
Yards, right?
Yeah.
Dante Culpepper. There's another one. He kind of fell off. I'm going to have to look at Culpepper's
Dante
numbers.
Dante had a few. He had like six or seven years.
Right, that he had a bigger body of work. Right?
Maybe in a smaller sample size, Nick Foles?
No.
Well, he had one really good year.
One year thing, and nobody really believed
Nobody was
it.
Really sure of that if he was the real deal.
He was like, what, 27 touchdowns and two picks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
He's not going to replicate that again. He didn't.
But, look, we could probably come up with a few more. There are probably not an exorbitant amount of these guys that we felt really good at. I got to find out Dante's numbers. Dante was MVP runner-up 1 year in his in his biggest statistical season. Yeah, let me see here. Yeah, Dante, actually, that was Dante. Dante didn't play his rookie year, right? Because that was Randall Cunningham's team at the time, right?
Yep.
So he came in through 33 touchdowns in his first year as a starter. Oh, my goodness, man. Led the league in his first year as a starter. Then he dropped down to 14, brought it back up to 14 in 11 games, 18 in a full season, then up to 25. Looked like he was back, and the interceptions were coming down. Then he threw for 39 touchdowns with 11 picks, 4,700 yards. So that was by season six in his career, and he had made the Pro Bowl three times by that point in time. So he had a decent career, and then he hung around for another five seasons after that. But he really had a decent career. But, man, I mean, Tony, he went from being the runner-up in winning the MVP that year, led the league in completions, threw for 4,700 yards, as we said, nearly 40 touchdowns.
Yeah.
294 yards a game, which led the league, and never after that started more than seven games in a season. Isn't that amazing? I mean, injuries and ineffectiveness caught up with Dante Culpepper. Hell of a guy to watch when he was on his game.
No doubt.
No doubt about it. All right, if you got any more you want to throw into that category, give us a call at 641-1010 or hit us up on the text line driven by Duval Ford at the same number. Question of the day is this: how much of your expectations change from the end of last season to now, based on what the Jaguars have accomplished in terms of player procurement this offseason and the guys they've let go? Where the roster stands now compared to what it was then, how much of your expectations change? Or, as one person pointed out, look, I expected a lot of these kind of moves to be made, so I factored that into my expectations. That's fine, too. Share with us your thoughts on that. And also go to my Twitter feed, at MD_1010XL, and you can vote on our poll where we give you a range for the Jaguar win total this year, and we'll see where things fall on that. We'll leave that up there today and update it throughout the course of the afternoon. All right, 641-1010 is the number. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, a lot of good submissions here on the text line driven by Duval Ford of quarterbacks that may fit the category we're talking about. Guys that have had you feeling really good about where their careers were headed after the first couple of years, but then fell off. As Tony said, you don't see it too often of guys that you felt, wow, after year two, this guy's going places. Josh Freeman was a great example.
Freeman's a really good one. Freeman and Kaepernick are the two.
Kaepernick is outstanding because, I mean, again, the guy was on the brink of winning a Super Bowl. But you talk about Freeman, Tony, 26-5, 25-6, I think, on TD interception in his second year.
Yeah.
Completed over 60% of his passes. You're like, wow, this guy's going places. He dipped big time the next year through many more interceptions and touchdowns. Rebounded for one season and then fell off the cliff. So it's not, and we're not saying, look, I mean, it could be, we're sitting here saying, okay, that's more than 2 years and then boom. Well, you're not going to be happy if Blake Bortles' career trajectory is big dip this year, one rebound season, and then poof, it's gone.
That last season for Freeman was 27-17, and then he never threw more than two touchdowns in a season.
Two.
The next season, he threw two.
And he had one of the worst starts. Of course, he got thrown in. What was he with Minnesota for, like, 3 days?
Yeah.
And they're like, we're going to start you on Monday Night Football. good luck. Have at it, Josh.
Somebody, that was rough.
Somebody said, hey, as much as I love him, what about David Garrard? Well, for me, David doesn't fit. Again, we're talking about guys 2 years into his career. You're wondering, David Garrard, you're like, is he a career backup? What is he? We don't know. We haven't seen him. You know, he had started one game at that point in time for the Jaguars, and in his first 4 years, he only started eight games combined. Started 10 in 2006, was anointed the starting quarterback, won the job over Byron Leftwich in 2007. He started all those games in 2006 when he started the five in 2005, right, when they went to the playoffs.
In the season.
Right, in season, yeah. Right, and then Leftwich came back for the playoff game, and you know, then Dave really became a starter halfway through his career. So it's a different trajectory. We're looking at guys who came into the league, and at the end of their second year, you're saying, hey, Sky's got it figured out. We may be seeing one of the next great ones. I remember thinking about Josh Freeman, Tony, at the time. Like, how could the Jets have passed on this guy? This is unbelievable. He's 26-5, and it was like, you know, case study for why you should always draft the quarterback if you don't have the answer, right? And then you see what happened the rest of the way. RG3,
no,
we already mentioned him. Some people have mentioned Mark Sanchez. Despite the fact that Mark Sanchez had tremendous playoff success his first 2 years, I didn't feel the same way about Sanchez.
No.
In fact, he struggled mightily. Now, the one thing Sanchez had going for him, Tony, is he played better in the postseason than he did in the regular season, right? When he was in it, I mean, he won 4 road games, 2 in each of his first 2 years. That's pretty big time. Got to the AFC championship game, even with a great defense and a great running game. You know, for a first and second year quarterback to be able to pull that off was pretty good. Someone mentioned Aaron Brooks, the New Orleans Saints, and my first initial reaction was, huh, that seems like a good one. I remember he made a quick splash early. Aaron Brooks had a pretty good impact for about a half a decade. He was a, you know, a 3,500-yard passer with over 21 or more touchdowns for 4 or 5 years running. So he had a nice career, and I believe Aaron Brooks is an undrafted guy when the Saints
signed
him.
I think you're right.
If I'm not mistaken. Jay Cutler, I don't know if I, you know, feel that way about Jay Cutler.
Look, I don't want Blake Bortles to have the same career trajectory as Jay Cutler. Like, I don't want that to be the peak of Blake Bortles' success, but the guy's been a starter in the league for a decade, you know, and he's been a pretty consistent starter in the league for a decade.
Yeah, despite the fact that they're not winning, he's been, you know, and look, he's led the league in interceptions twice. Blake's already done it once, right? But Cutler, early on, his first season, he started 5 games. Then he went 20 touchdowns, 14 picks as the Broncos went 7-9 as a full-time starter. He was 8-8 his third year.
That's about what he is. He's about a 20 touchdown, 14 pick
guy. And that's
guy.
What he went, 25-18, 27-26, which is way too many, 23-16, 13-7, 19-14. He's never really mastered that 2-1 ratio.
No.
He's more. He looks like what would that be? Like a
1.5 to 1, 4 to 3. Yeah,
kind of. Right. It is what
but
he.
But he's
two,
a big time.
One and a
he's
half.
A big time risk taker, much like Blake is. He likes to fit throws into small windows and use his arm to get balls in there that probably
right.
shouldn't be thrown.
We shouldn't compare Blake Bortles' arm though to Jay Cutler's.
No, absolutely
arm,
not.
Right. I mean, Blake's got a strong enough arm. Blake can make the throws necessary. And the thing I think that was we all liked last year, you didn't see too many flutter balls, right? I mean, look, he still uncorked a few bad throws. That first rookie minicamp, man.
I know.
It was.
But you saw like the one in London, you know, that wound up in the pick six going
right.
the other way. When he let it go, you were like, ooh.
Right.
Ooh, what is that? Like, and that's the only one like that I can remember last year that when he let it go, it just kind of fluttered. I was like, oh, no.
Yes.
Like, where did that come from?
I don't know if I've ever seen Cutler. I'm sure he's lost the handle once or twice, but that guy's got a pure arm, man.
No doubt.
I mean, he's got a seed. But, again, we don't want him to be, like you said, you don't want to be Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler's had 2 10-win seasons in his career as a full-time starter in the National Football League. His last 3 years, 5-6, 5-10, 6-9 as a starting quarterback with the Chicago Bears. He's 32 years old. He's better than you could find on the street. He's good enough to be a starting quarterback. He's not good enough to be a championship
that's
quarterback.
That's kind of the floor, right, of where I think. Honestly, I think
hope.
That's kind of the floor of where Bortles' career would be. He feels like that type of guy at the bare minimum to me right now. So that's why I'm a little bit more high on it than some the caller that we had. For instance, was right now on Blake Bortles. I think that's kind of the bottom, and I expect it to be much higher than that when everything is said and done. I think in the next year or two, we're going to be talking about Blake Bortles as a top 8 to 10 quarterback in the league, and deservedly so.
Somebody mentioned Mike Vick. I don't agree with that at all.
No.
I understand he missed a couple of seasons because he was in Leavenworth, but Mike Vick, by the way, was the first quarterback ever win a road playoff game in Lambeau, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
I believe he was. Maybe when the temperature was a certain point, or was it any road playoff game in Lambeau? Might have been the temperature deal. You know, they don't lose at home. I know the Bucs had never won a game where the starting temperature was X at kickoff or below. I want to say he was the first guy to win a road playoff game in Lambeau, if I'm not mistaken. But either way, Mike Vick was a 3-time Pro Bowler in his first 5 seasons. Had a couple more years, then he went to prison for a couple years. He came back, he almost won the damn league MVP, Tony, right? I mean, in 2010. So Mike Vick actually, as a passer, got better in the second half of his career, when you look at the completion percentage, the yardage totals, he became a better passer later in his career. He was never a super efficient passer. 133 touchdowns, 88 picks. So I would not put Mike Vick in that circumstance. A couple people have mentioned David Woodley back in the day with the Dolphins. But David Woodley, to me, and I'd have to go back and look to see what those exact numbers are, and I will. I remember David Woodley as a quarterback for the Dolphins. I remember watching Dolphin football when David Woodley was at quarterback. I never got the feeling about David Woodley that I've gotten about Blake Bortles. No, David Woodley was a winner early on. 6-5, 11-3-1, 7-2. His first 3 years, nowhere near as productive. And I understand different era, but 14 touchdowns, 17 picks, 12 touchdowns, 13 picks, 5 touchdowns. He went 7-2 throwing 5 touchdowns with 8 interceptions. In 9 games, Tony. How the hell do you do that? And that Miami team went on to the Super Bowl that year. Did they go to the Super Bowl? 82? Yeah, I think. I want to say they went to the Super Bowl and lost to John Riggins' Washington Redskins, if I'm not mistaken.
Let's go look at the 82 season.
I'll check that out. But regardless, your overall point is a good one, I think. It's still rare to find. We can list some individual examples and we go, oh, yeah. But there's not this, I don't think, a laundry list of guys that were like, wow. I mean, he went from, you know, okay, showed a few flashes to, wow, major step forward, franchise record in touchdowns and yardage, certainly led the league in interceptions. I get it. I'm not trying to discount that. But a jump forward from year one to year two. And where you feel about that right now, I don't think you ever felt that way about David Woodley or a number of these other guys that we're discussing. Some of them, yes. But your greater point, I think, is a good one.
I think there's a lot of quarterbacks that after 2 years, if you feel the way you feel about Blake, they wind up being a guy that you're like, there he is. Right? I think there's a whole lot more of those guys that after 2 years, when you feel the way you do about this guy, that they turn out to be the guy for your franchise over the course of the next couple of years. And there are, and look, Kaepernick and Freeman are fantastic examples of the other side of this thing, where you felt really good about them after 2 years, and then they fell apart. Freeman, I think, specifically, Kaepernick got that weird contract from San Francisco that it almost felt like they were saying, can he really keep doing this? Like, there was almost like this question from the 49ers of, we're going to give you this payday, and if you earn all this money, then you earn all this money, but we're a little bit concerned that your style of play isn't going to work and everyone's going to figure it out at some point in this league. And it turns out that San Francisco was right on that account, that teams have figured out Colin Kaepernick.
That's a fair point, but remember, there were guys, was it Ron Jaworski, saying he could be one of the all-time greats?
No, I know,
right?
They were.
I mean, so
yeah.
there was, I think, the larger feeling, and I think San Fran was smart, and certainly in hindsight, they were very smart to structure the contract the way they did.
Basically year to year.
Right, but I think the larger feeling about Kaepernick, even if he wasn't on Wilson's level nationally, was that, here's a guy on the rise. Look at this
guy.
I mean, when you saw the package of athletic ability and what he did to the Green Bay Packers in that postseason with like 170 yards on the ground.
Unstoppable.
Cannon arm.
Yeah.
And you had a team that was built, Tony. You had a team with an offensive line that rivaled what Dallas has right now, right? Or, you know, in the ballpark, you had a very strong defense. You had a running game with Frank Gore. You had everything going on that you thought they were built for long-term success. And then, you know, a few years later, they had the offseason from hell, which was just last year. And everything is falling apart now in San Francisco. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in on the phone lines and also the text line. Driven by Duval Ford when we return in the moment. We've got this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL with Fat Tony and Tyler Devitt. I'm Mike Dempsey on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
Oh, I feel like we're loaded today. It's exactly 11 o'clock, Tony, and I've got some good stuff for you on this date in football history. We'll go back to 1969. It was time to merge the two conferences. Baltimore, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh all agreeing to go from the NFC to the AFC in the National Football League. We've seen Seattle go from the AFC to the NFC. In our lifetime, there was some talk that Arizona was going to come to the AFC for a while. That didn't pan out. So right now, things pretty stable in the National Football League, and I'd hate to see them add any expansion teams anytime soon. 32 teams, 8 divisions of 4. The symmetry is too perfect right now. A lot of famous birthdays for this date as well. I'm going to go back to 1912. Tony, on May 17th, a guy named Clarence Ace Parker, who's an NFL quarterback and tailback. He played a lot of different things, but he went to the Hall of Fame in 1972, played for the Brooklyn Dodgers, the Boston Yankees, the New York Yankees. These were all football teams in the NFL. But the most impressive thing, he said, what kind of concussive brain injury? Are you kidding? He lived to be 101 years old, Tony. He passed away in 2013, Ace Parker.
That's a good life right there.
I guess those leather helmets were a little sturdier than we thought. Tyler, whose birthday you got in there?
It's actually not a football birthday, just a person that's very important to me. My father turns 55 today.
Happy birthday, Dad!
Happy birthday!
Tyler's dad,
Brian,
55.
Brian Debbitt turns 55, double nickels.
I've been mistaken for Tyler's dad once or twice in our times around town. Happy birthday, the double nickels birthday. 1934, Earl Morrill born. He was a three-time champion, by the way, of course, with the Colts and the Dolphins. Two Pro Bowls, two-time first-team All-Pro. He passed away in 2014 at the age of 79, to which Ace Parker was like, what? 79? What's wrong with you? 1982, Matt Cassel was born on this date. He's 34 years old. He has quarterbacked two different teams to 10-win seasons, yet he's a steaming pile of hot garbage when it comes to NFL quarterbacking. How does that happen? He is now the backup to Marcus Mariota in Tennessee.
Yeah, we all saw the disaster when he was called upon in Dallas last year.
Just hideous. Happy birthday to the Regilution today, Tony.
Oh, dear.
Reg.
Always open on the curl.
Reggie Williams. Hey, man, throw it to me. 1983.
Still, that preseason game we were down there in Miami is the lasting image of Reggie Williams
Striking,
in my mind
wasn't
forever.
It?
Just everyone else is ready to get out of that room. Reggie's still in full uniform. I had pointed out to you on three different plays where he is wide open. They're not even covering the guy. Down on goal line, doesn't even get looked at.
He didn't get looked at. He thought he was cut right then and there. He thought he was done.
Yeah.
And he was able to stick around.
The next week, he got that catch against Green Bay where he got absolutely blasted.
And he hung on, and that was the moment. You're absolutely right, Tony. That was the moment that secured his roster spot, and that was the game that sealed the fate of Byron Leftwich, too,
yep.
Right? The sideline demeanor, the whole thing that played into it. Reggie's 33, never played another snap after he left the Jags. Remember, he got busted for possession of cocaine on a DUI stop, like the night that free agency opened up. You're trying to get his second contract. Reggie had 2,300 and 22 yards. I should have asked you how many yards you thought he had. 2,322. That's it. Robinson just had 1,400 yards.
He had that year where he caught the 10 or 11 touchdowns or whatever it was. He had like 10 touchdowns on like 32 catches.
38 catches.
Yeah.
38 catches. He had 18 for his career. also born in this date, 1985. I'll tell you in a second. Let me ask you and Ty. I want an immediate answer. I want a visceral gut reaction to this. Like, if you could trade Blake Bortles right now, yes or no, for Matt Ryan straight up, yes or no?
Hell no.
No.
Hell no, he went with. Of course not. He's 31 years old today.
Yeah.
By the time Blake Bortles is 31, Matt Ryan's going to be out of the league for a few years. And you look at Matt Ryan's numbers, and I get so caught up in the TD to interception ratio, but I think it's a good starting point to jump off on. First of all, Matt Ryan, even despite the fact that he's had Julio Jones and many times a very good Roddy White
no doubt.
In his career, and Tony Gonzalez, right, has only thrown 30 touchdowns once in his career. He had 32 and 14 back in 2012, and he was a Pro Bowler that year. And his interceptions the last 5 years, 12, 14, 17, 14, 16, Blake's not way out of that spectrum, right?
No.
With 18, so... you know, you look at the yardage, he's been a consistent high-volume yardage passer. There's no question about that. He's thrown it over 600 times like Blake did, but each of the last 4 years. I think he's just okay. I mean, I think Mike Smith and Matt Ryan deserve a lot of credit for reshaping, along with Thomas Dimitroff, reshaping the attitude and the entire direction of that franchise, turn them from a perennial laughing stock, you know, a team that never had a winning record two consecutive seasons in their history, to going 11-5, 9-5, 13-3, 10-6, 13-3 those first 5 years together. A lot of kudos there, but I think Matt Ryan is ultimately limited, and what you see is what you get, which is not bad. He's better than a lot of guys.
No, he's fine. And Matt Ryan is the picture of the guy that if you give him a top 10 defense, that team's going to go places. Matt Ryan is good enough to carry that kind of team and that kind of franchise to a team that's going to go 12-4, 13-3 from time to time. Now, what they're going to get done in the playoffs, questionable. obviously during Matt Ryan's tenure there in Atlanta, but he's good enough to give you that. And I think Blake Bortles he's that type of guy right now. I think if the defense does turn out to be a top 8 to 10 defense here in the next couple of years, that you're going to see this football team as a 12-13 win team.
But you're gambling to some degree that Blake will go down that path, right? Yep. As opposed to the Josh Freeman path and the others that we've been highlighting today.
I feel like the ceiling is higher for Blake.
I agree with you, but the one thing that Matt Ryan gives you is consistency.
No doubt.
Year after year after year, he's been a 4,000-yard passer pretty much each of the last six seasons. He's going to throw somewhere in the mid to high 20s in touchdowns. He's going to throw mid-teens in interceptions. And generally, their team is going to win. Now, they were 8-8 last year. Following a 4-12 and 6-10 season the year before, but five really strong seasons to start his career in the one loss column and more playoff success than they had, three-time Pro Bowler. But I'm with you. Maybe we're being provincial, but I'll take Blake as well. And that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Cincinnati has announced a 4-year contract extension with free safety Sean Williams. Williams will be replacing Reggie Nelson in the Bengals lineup. He started 4 games in 3 years with the Bengals with 2 interceptions since being drafted by Cincinnati in the third round in 2013. So he is with the team now through 2020. The Buffalo Bills announced yesterday that this year's first-round draft pick Shaq Lawson will have to undergo surgery on his shoulder. After aggravating an injury during a non-contact drill, Lawson's surgery is expected to sideline him for 5 to 6 months, which would put his return in the middle of October or November, which is obviously well into the regular season. The Bills also announced that star wide receiver Sammy Watkins underwent surgery to repair a broken bone in his foot. Watkins is expected to miss training camp and be back in time for the regular season. Sammy himself took to Twitter saying that we shouldn't believe everything that we hear, but didn't clarify what. If any part of the report about his injury, surgery, or timetable for return is untrue, Denver Broncos quarterback Mark Sanchez underwent surgery on his left thumb. That is expected to keep him out for the beginning of the team's OTAs that begin a week from today. Sanchez is expected to be the placeholder quarterback for the Broncos while they get this year's first-round pick Paxton Lynch ready to play. Sanchez, of course, with the Philadelphia Eagles last year.
All right, 641-1010, if you'd like to jump in as we go around the National Football League like we do every single day here. The text line open for business at all hours, and we even reply to you if you hit us up during our show at 641-1010, at least if we feel the need. On Twitter today and on Facebook, the question of the day asks you how much, if at all, your expectations for the Jaguars have changed since the beginning of the offseason when you factor in free agency and the draft now, what's been a healthy up to this point offseason. Everything they've been able to do, where were you then compared to where you are now? And also, if you go directly to my Twitter profile, my timeline, at MD_1010XL, Tony retweeted it, Tyler did as well. We got a poll up there. How many wins for the Jags this year? 6 or less? 7 to 8 is an option? 9 to 10 is an option? Or 11 or more wins? We'll update you here in a minute on where things stand. We'll leave that open throughout the course of the day, and we'll give a final tally on that tomorrow. And we kind of organically came into the conversation, Tony, of the guys who started their career and left you feeling the way you feel about Blake Bortles right now after a couple of seasons, and how many of those guys fell off the cliff from that point on, and how many went on to have, you know, strong seasons that would be backed up by the start that they had. Several people have suggested Ryan Tannehill. How do you feel about Ryan Tannehill right now?
Yeah, he's okay.
He's okay, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever love Ryan Tannehill?
No.
I didn't ever love him, but I thought he was on a pretty fair, you know, trajectory as far as his career went.
And his contract didn't affect the way I feel about Ryan Tannehill.
No, but, you know, I look at Tannehill's numbers, and the big dip was in completion percentage last year, but he's still completing 62% of his passes. Not terrible, right? The year before it was 66, which is exceptional to go along with 27 touchdowns and 12 picks. You know, last year he was 24 touchdowns and 12 picks. It's still 2-1, which, you know, you'd like it to be higher, but 2-1 is basically what you got out of Blake Bortles. You know, you're going to need to cut those interceptions down. If you can push 2.5 to 3-1, that's what some of the great guys do. I'm not saying all these guys are going to be great, but, you know, Tannehill, 7-9, 8-8, 8-8, 6-10. He's been the same guy pretty much his entire career. Now, sometimes the numbers don't tell you the full story. I didn't get to put the eyeballs on Tannehill on very many games last year. So I couldn't tell you if it just looked like he wasn't the same. There were things he wasn't doing, you know, whether it was pocket awareness or missing open receivers or anything like that. But, the numbers did come down a little bit in completion percentage, but that's really the area. Average yards per attempt went up to over 7 for the first time in his career. He's never been a great deep ball thrower. Not his forte. So they want to focus, I think, on the running game a little bit more this year. Adam Gase coming in from Chicago. They like to run the ball. Gase likes to run the ball as much as anybody in the league when he was an offensive coordinator, and I don't think that's going to change when he's a head coach. But Tannehill's quarterback rating last year was 88.7, down from 92.8, but right in line with a little bit above his career mark. I don't know why there's such a perception that he took such a major step back last year. He just didn't take a step forward. He kind of put it into neutral a little bit, maybe a tiny bit of a backslide last year. I don't think the full story's been written on Ryan Tannehill yet.
I think it's hard to overcome the prevailing feeling about your football team, right? And I get they went 6-10. That was a team that there was a lot of pressure on the Miami Dolphins to take a step forward. They were the team that signed Ndamukong Suh. They had done these things during the offseason there before the 2015 season, and their coach was fired a month in. And I think it's hard to overcome those perceptions, even if in the middle of all that going on, you are still having an okay year. It's not a bad year for Ryan Tannehill last year. It's an okay season from Tannehill, even a solid one. But it's really difficult when everything else is going wrong for a franchise, because that's just the way it is. A lot of times you feel about the quarterback the way you feel about the franchise, or about the franchise the way you feel about the quarterback. That's the reality in the National Football League.
Isn't it funny, though, because Miami won more games than the Jags,
yeah,
but the perception is the Jags are on the brink of breaking out. There was a perception to some degree, not as strong, last year that they were going to take a bigger step forward than they did, and they didn't do that yet. There seems to be a feeling that Blake's on the rise.
Yeah.
The Jags are on the rise. And is it Blake? And he certainly threw all the touchdowns and the yardage, and that was great. But is it Blake, or is it now they're looking like, well, that defense is going to be there. They're going to win some games. They've got Allen Robinson. They've got Chris Ivory. They've got all these different pieces.
I think it's similar.
It's a little bit of everything, right,
yeah,
factored in. And
I think it's similar to what Miami was last year. I mean, Miami was a trendy pick. I picked them to win the East last year. When we were doing our preseason picks and finally be the team that overtook New England, there were a lot of people who kind of had that sense about that Miami team. And instead, it collapsed completely in the first month and a half of the season. And it's a similar deal here in Jacksonville. It's without 2 8-8 seasons to back it up, right? It's not like the Jags have been 8-8 the last 2 years. And it's like, all right, this is the year. It's got to be the year. You can't go 8-8 2 years and then not take that next step forward.
Right.
And there's a lot of pressure on football teams when that's going on. The pressure in Jacksonville is different, but in a lot of ways the same, because this is the fourth year under this regime. It's year 3 for Blake Bortles and a lot of these young offensive pieces to be playing football together. And they brought in all this talent on the defensive side of the football. So I think the jump is expected to be about the same. I don't know if the pressure is necessarily ratcheted up like it was in Miami.
All right, we got to step aside. We'll come back. And Sheldon Day signed his contract as a now official member of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll take a look at where things stand right now, Tony, on that defensive line group, and play the numbers game a little bit. Where does Sheldon Day factor in, and how well stocked are the Jags along the defensive front? We'll do that next. Take your calls if you're so inclined at 641-1010. That's also, as we know, the text line driven by Duval Ford. With that, Tony and Tyler Devitt, I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today rolls on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we continue on here on this Tuesday morning. 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. The collective we, the royal we, have Sheldon Day in the fold for the Jacksonville Jaguars now, Tony. And man, I'm telling you, playing the numbers game on the defensive line is going to be an interesting watch in the month of August, particularly as this thing gets pared down. Assuming everybody stays healthy, best unit on the football team, deepest unit, I think.
Just defensive line?
Yeah, defensive line.
Yes.
Better than wide receiver?
On par with wide receiver.
I think wide receiver at the top end may be better, but the quality of the depth, and there's so many guys, and you need more guys, obviously, on the defensive line. There are four spots as opposed to two or three starting positions, depending on what you're running. Malik Jackson, I mean, we go through some of these guys who are mortal locks. Obviously, Malik Jackson's on this football team. Dante Fowler Jr.'s on this football team. Roy Miller is on this football team. Just stop me if you disagree with any of this, by the way. I'm stating these as their certainties. Sheldon Day, who just signed, is on this football team. Yannick Ngakoue is on this football team, right? Jared Odrick on this football team.
Yep.
Tyson Alualu on this football team? I think so.
I probably, but that's there could be a debate there.
I think they love Tyson Alualu.
I do too.
I think they do because guys never missed a game, and they love his versatility, and he plays hard. And if Tyson was drafted in the second round, people would be like, "Damn, Tyson Alualu is one of the better draft picks the Jaguars have made, right?" Because he just shows up and plays and goes about his business. He's not asked to produce big statistical numbers. He's asked to be a disruptor at times. And also, at times, hold the point of attack. I think he's on the football team. I would say there's more wiggle room with him than these other guys mentioned, but I'm not. I think the percentage that Tyson Alualu wouldn't be here if healthy is very small.
I think so, too, but I also look at it and say, okay, when you're looking at the three techniques specifically, right, which is where we think Malik Jackson's going to be starting, Derek Marks is going to be on the football team at that spot. Sheldon Day, that's where he's a more natural
correct
fit for this football team. Malik can move to the five if they need him to, and probably will on pass rush situations. He may be playing that side of the line of scrimmage in pass rush situations. So if you have that depth out there with Malik Jackson, you already have all those guys at the three. I wonder if it becomes a numbers game for a guy like Tyson. Now, I like the flexibility of Tyson to go between the three and five more than I like, say, Michael Bennett and his flexibility. But
right,
but the number for Mike Bennett, Alualu is only under contract for one more year, I think, here in Jacksonville. It feels like they just have a bunch of guys that can play where Tyson is playing. And while they love him, maybe it becomes a numbers crunch for him at some point as far as who they're going to keep.
Percentage right now, just, you know, we don't know.
Low,
but
low that they would let him go. Yeah.
Less. I think it's less than 10.
I do too.
Okay, so low, but not completely off the board.
No.
Derek Marks, if healthy, I think is a lock to be on this football team.
No
if
doubt.
Healthy, right? And that's the thing. He's got to prove to be healthy. I know it's going to happen. A year from now, people are going to be like, man, Derek's 30. You know, hey, 30's not a dirty word. It shouldn't be in the NFL. I get it when you're trying to build the franchise up. They've gone excessively young. It's okay to have some 30-year-old guys that
yes
are playing at a high level. Let's hope Derek can get back to that high level. You mentioned Michael Bennett. I don't think he's a lock to make the team. I think he likely will make the team. I think he's a mortal lock. What's your feeling on him?
On who?
Michael Bennett.
Not a lock, but again, you're talking about a guy that was a sixth-round pick.
Right, draft pick, and
so
who they felt was a steal.
Yeah, really manageable. Played okay last year for him when he was on the field. I would be surprised.
Maybe
if he's
a game
not a part
day inactive, but
yeah,
right, in that kind of situation. Avery Jones, who they just re-signed, I think will be on this football team.
Probably.
Right? I mean, very likely.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a surprise. Chris Smith, I think it's likely that he's not on this football team.
I agree.
Ryan Davis, I think, will.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They brought him back, and he does give you, you know, if he's a one-element guy, the one element he has when he's on top of his game is the element you so desperately need, which is getting to the quarterback. We mentioned Sheldon Day. I mean, that right there, that's pretty much your group, right? You still got Quanterra Smith. Good luck, brother. I mean, it's an uphill climb, right, at this point in time.
And I know that at least the Jaguars are listing Bjorn Werner as an outside linebacker right now on their own depth charts that they're putting out. So Holmes and Werner are listed as linebackers right now on this team. I don't know how much they are, or if those guys are on the team, my guess is they're going to be guys that are on the field in pass rush situations as
right
defensive linemen.
And does it really matter
right
what your designation is at that point? It's going to be a numbers game between the linebacking core and the defensive line. I didn't bring up Tyron Holmes because he has consistently been listed as a linebacker. If that's how they want to look at him, that's fine. You know, but I think Tyron Holmes, you know, I've seen some speculation. Oh, man, this guy may have a tough time making the team. I don't think you spend a draft pick on a guy that was as productive as he was. And if he shows you anything athletically, throughout the course of the summer. And that was one of the things that Jags remarked upon with Holmes, was that we wanted to test his athleticism. The dominance was there on tape. He played a lower level of competition, but if you do that, you should put up eye-popping numbers. He had 18 sacks last year. He did that. So I think Tyrone Holmes, whatever you list him as, will be a member of this team. But you go Fowler in no particular order. Fowler, Miller, Aluwalu, Jackson, Marks, Odrick. We didn't mention Odrick. We're assuming Odrick's locked in. Marks and Odrick, Michael Bennett, Avery Jones, Ryan Davis, Sheldon Day, Yannick Ngakoue. That's 11 right there. And with whatever you want to consider Werner and Holmes.
That's a couple hybrids.
Right. A couple of hybrid guys. If you count one towards the D-line, one towards the linebacking core, I could see them both being on this football team as well. So the point is that none of those guys seem to be stiffs, right? They all seem to have a role and a value and a future value. Getting back to Sheldon Day, who signed with the Jags yesterday. This is what Gus had to say about their new defensive lineman out of Notre Dame just a week ago.
First and foremost, I think his power. He's really powerful, coming out of his stance and, with the sled work that we did. But then, you kind of look at him, can he be that inside rusher? And you saw us get off, and he's pretty natural in there. And, but a very strong, very good technician as well.
And that seems to be where they want to use him primarily in his rookie campaign, is as an inside rusher. Let him focus on one thing, right? But Notre Dame did line him up on the outside at times and let him play.
And he was dominant doing that at the Senior Bowl last year, or this offseason as well. So, look, it feels like he's more that three technique. And, again, when they drafted him, we were talking about this the Monday after the draft was done. I'm curious to see how much Sheldon Day can give them at that kind of Roy Miller spot, where do they feel like at times – they can get Roy off the field, maybe even in run situations to get Sheldon Day on the field. Can he directly back up Roy Miller, too? And I'm curious to see if he does have that in him. I have no doubt that Sheldon Day can add some pass rush from the inside, but I feel like Malik Jackson adds pass rush from the inside, and Sendarek Marks adds pass rush on the inside. And I don't know what the rotation would look like for Day if that's where he thinks he can make his bones. Right now on this football team, I think he needs to be able to show that he has some value at that one spot.
I think he's got the potential to do that.
I do, too.
In a perfect world, though, if everyone's healthy, maybe he is a candidate. Again, rookies, game day inactive, shouldn't be shocked. I think Ngakoue will be up on game day. I can see Ngakoue being the primary backup at the Leo position, behind he's Dante Fowler's guy. Dante Fowler off the field, and Ngakoue's on the field. That's in the best-case scenario. If he shows, the course of minicamps and OTAs and training camp that he's up to the task, which you have no reason to believe he won't be, coming out of the Big Ten where he played as well as he did last year to get himself drafted in the third round by the Jaguars. All right, if you'd like to get in again, 641-1010, I will hit up the text line when we come back, driven by Duval Ford, and take a look at the question of the day and the poll we threw out there today. They go hand in hand. The question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, is how much have your expectations changed for this football team, the Jaguars, since the beginning of the offseason, now that free agency and the draft have been completed? And also on the poll, we've given you a few different ranges, but how many wins you think the Jaguars post this year will give you the update on where things stand. Nearly 350 votes already in just 90 minutes of polling. So we appreciate the feedback from all of you guys out there. With Fat Tony and Tyler Devitt, I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today rolls on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I got to find something to do with myself today, Tony. No soccer practice for the first time in months. I don't have a Fat Tony show tonight, a Fat Tuesday to do.
No.
So
I do.
I know you do.
I am excited. All the news in the last 25 minutes has got me so pumped up.
Freddy Gonzalez.
Oh, he's out.
Out the door.
The bell has rung finally for that underachieving bum in Atlanta for the last 5 years.
I was really enjoying the epic run they were on.
You guys need to stop with this. Can't blame him for 2016. I don't care whose fault 2016 is. I hold him accountable for 5 years of this team underachieving under him.
There you go.
I do.
Not just
a
one-year firing, saying.
I don't know. I don't know why they kept him this offseason. There's really no explanation for why he was still there. But I'll get into that tonight. on Fat Tuesday.
I'm sure many will look forward to that.
I got a lot more to say about that.
Let's go to Short Dog in Gainesville, our good friend, on the call-in line at 641-1010. Hello, Short Dog.
Hey, man, what's up, Mike?
What's up?
Hey, Tony, how you doing?
What's up?
Like the show, man, always. I just got two quick things I want to say. Like I was telling Tyler, I'm going to be very excited to see what this defensive line going to look like. My first question is to Mike and Tony, who do you think will be the starting four on the line?
I think we're probably in agreement on this, that it'll be Fowler, Miller, Malik Jackson, Jared Odrick.
Yes.
There will be other combinations probably maybe that even start games, but I think it's the most prevalent starting combination provided they're healthy.
Okay. This is my opinion. I just think, like I was telling Tom, I just think Roy Miller would be the odd man out in this. I see it going Fowler, then Derek, Malik, and Yanni. That's how I see it. I just don't think – I think they want more youth and they want more speed in Rory's spot, and that's how I see it.
Did you say you thought Yannick Ngakoue will be the starter on the other end of the line?
I think so, man. Mike, I might be wrong, but I think so.
I did this one. I don't think you're right on either one, but I think you have a better chance of being right on Roy Miller being usurped by Cindric Marks. Ngakoue doesn't profile in the defense that they run. Think of a big, stout guy as your left end, right? Red Bryant, Jared Odrick. Ngakoue doesn't fit the physical mold of what they're looking for, Short Dog. He is a Leo pass rusher. He is going to play behind Fowler. They might both play on third down. But in your base defense, Ngakoue's got that's not what they're going to use him for. So I would say that's a solid no on that one.
Okay, so Sheldon Day will probably be backing up who? Derek or Malik?
He'll be competing for those because Derek, in our mind, is going to be backing up Malik and backing up Miller in a sense. In that, look, when you had Henderson and Stroud here, Rob Meyer played a ton of snaps.
Yeah,
right. You play three guys and you rotate them in there and you keep them fresh. In this case, when you get in pass rush situations, that's not Roy Miller's forte. You got a handful of sacks, but he's not a guy who's a pocket collapser. He's stout at the point of attack. You want him to be your nose tackle on that defensive line, the run stuffer, allow a guy like Malik Jackson or Cindric Marks next to him to penetrate and create a little havoc, Tony. And he played great last year in that role.
No, he definitely did. Look, this is a football team that they said it as soon as the season ended. It's about third down for this defense because they were good on first and second down. Stopping the run, this was a good football team last year in stopping the opponent's run, and that in part was due to the play of Roy Miller. He was really good last year in the role that this team asked him to play, and he added four sacks. For Roy Miller at the spot he's playing to get four sacks last year is a spectacular season from that guy because they don't expect that from him. He's a guy who's been a 1 to 1.5 sack guy basically his entire career in the National Football League. Got four last year, really helped them against the run, so I certainly don't see him coming out of that lineup for those first couple downs. And I, as much as anyone else, I am curious to see how they're going to rotate all these bodies and use them all on this defensive line. Because, look, Roy's coming off the field on third down. Of that, I have no doubt. Do they feel better about Malik Jackson and Cindric Marks as those inside guys? Ryan Davis, when he's come in, has basically been that inside rusher on that third down package. Is that where his role is going to be on this team as far as pass rushing this year? I'm really curious to see how they want to use these guys.
Tony, do you think we won't see all four of these guys subbed out at some point, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, couldn't you envision Aluwalu, Cindric Marks, Avery Jones, and Yannick Ngakoue being on the field at the same time, right?
Yeah.
On a first or second down type situation, depending on, you know, if you've got a long drive going, if the defense has been on the field, if they need a break, whatever the case may be, it just shows you they're starting to build depth. We think it's going to be quality depth and flexibility there. Short Dog, we appreciate the call, man. Always appreciate the feedback. Whether we agree with your lineup predictions or not, we always appreciate you weighing in on the program here. All right, Tony, let's get to the fan feedback question today first, and I'll update where the poll stands, and you can continue to vote on the poll. So, Jaguar fans, if you're a frequent listener of the show, please retweet that poll. Let's get as many people to vote on. We're over 360 now that have weighed in since the beginning of the program, so that's pretty cool. But let's go to the question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, where we asked Jaguar fans, how have your expectations changed, if at all, from the start of the offseason until right now in terms of what you think the Jags will do this year on the field? What do we get on Twitter?
From Tommy, well, I have a growler bet with a Cleveland fan that we go at least 8-8. So my expectations have risen. From Jags and Goats, no excuse now for defense not to be second best in the AFC South. From Eric, honestly, not a lot. I expect the defense to be addressed and the team to be better, and that hasn't changed, as he thinks both of those expectations have been met clearly. From Jarrell, expectations are up from pretender to contender for the division and more. From Joey, I went from 8-8 to 9-7 from missing the playoffs to winning the division. 2017 hasn't changed. Division title or bust. Now is the time, or next year. Okay, probably next year, but maybe now, as he answered 2016 and 17 there for us. And from Foxtrot, just put my ruby red shoes on and click three times for mediocre results. Too many what ifs.
All right. On the Facebook side, Tommy Blair just said Gus Bus equals destination playoffs. Daniel Martin, expectations really the same, just win ball games. Chad, I'll just put it this way. He seems a lot more excited about their chances this year from where they were. I can't really put into words what he has graphically displayed in the comments. Gareth said, I now believe that we'll have an even record or a slightly winning one either way, either of which should get us to the playoffs. Don't count on 8-8, 9-7 getting you to the playoffs. Right? It happened last year that the AFC South was a miserable cesspool of mediocrity or worse. Don't expect that. Don't count on that to happen again in 2016. You might be very disappointed. Dustin said the sinking of the Titanic was a miracle to the lobsters in the ship's kitchen. I don't know what this says. We have expect success or a miracle. I don't know. I'm sorry I read that now. Marshall says, I feel we'll improve in wins by at least two. So 8-8, 9-7 playoffs, ? I hope so, but I think the second half of the season will be off the chain. 2017 ticket will be the hardest in the league to get. No, it won't. Okay, it'll be a harder ticket than it's been in a long time in Jacksonville. It's never going to be the hardest ticket in the league to get. Okay? The population base isn't such that you're going to be able to create the kind of demand and waiting lists that other markets, when they're winning, have going on right now. All right, and a lot of the same. Look, I think everyone's expectations have bumped up a little bit. Some people feel like they've been burned over the last several years, and they don't want to get out of hand. I understand that as well.
It's built.
It is built. It feels more built this time around, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
A little bit more built. Did you vote in the poll, Tyler?
I did, and I said 9-7 when we did our prediction segment a few weeks ago. And
right.
I think maybe pushing 10 could be a little. I'm gonna go with nine.
As well. I'm like an 8-8, 9-7 guy right now, because part of me is trying not to get too wrapped up in the emotion of everything here. But going back to what Tony and I have been talking about for months, I feel they were a 7-9 team last year. That's the way I look at that team, and that it was a handful of very correctable things that I hope they rectify. So I'm not looking at it as a jump from 5 to 9. I'm looking at it more of a jump from 7-ish to 9, you know, and that maybe that's just a way of justifying it in my head, but that's how I feel about it. Tony, what'd you vote here?
I voted 7-8, that range. I think they feel like an 8-8 football team right now, and maybe it's just me continuing to temper my own expectations for this football team, given, again, I expected after they won that game in Baltimore with the way they had come out of the London game and played the Jets the way they did and beat Indianapolis to death here at home, this was a team with an opportunity in front of them at the end of the 2015 season that just was unable to hold on to it. So I'm still tempering my expectations a little bit, but I went that 7-8 range.
We have 372 votes right now, and we have a glorious bell curve distribution going on right here. 6 wins or less. And this is how many you think they'll win. And I'm sure, look, there are people out there clearly think they're not going to win a lot of games, or they're not sold, or they're not going to predict that they're going to win games until they see it happen. That's your prerogative, but only 8% came in. And again, this is a biased audience, right? The people that follow us on Twitter, by and large, Jaguar fans, the people that engage in these polls that we do, or the questions of the day that we do, are by and large Jaguar fans. And you would think they're probably a little more bullish. I think it's more natural to be bullish on your team, particularly since they have had a good offseason. So 8% said 6 wins or less for the Jags. 7 or 8 wins was the next option. 40% of the respondents came in at 7 or 8. And then 9 or 10, which Tyler and I voted for, 44% of the people are in that category. And then the final one, 11 wins or more, are for the people that, you know, the people, I guarantee you, if they win 11 this year, they're going to be people saying, I told you they'd win 11. I told you, no one believed me. I'm going to ask him, did you predict that last year too? Because I know some of you have. And sometimes people just predict the best year after year. But 8% on each end, on the 6 or less or the 11 or more. So kind of throw that out, and you're sitting there with 84% of the vote believing they're going to be between 7 and 10 wins, which obviously is the range. I would have, you know, you break it down any further, 7 wins, 8 wins, 9 wins, you divvy it up a little bit more, but Twitter only lets you have 4 options.
Do you remember this time last year what the response was as to the 2015 feeling, as to what fans would think?
I don't know.
What was the majority
feeling?
We
didn't do a specific poll like this, but I think you would have had a higher percentage
maybe?
in that 7 to 8 range. Doing the same exact parameters, you would have had very few people saying 10 or more, or 11 or more. You would have had, I'm guessing, maybe 25 to 30% of the people in that 9 to 10 range, and then the people that came out of there, the extra 10 or 15% would slide down into the 7 or 8 range. I think that's would have been the vast majority. You agree with that?
Yeah, something, you know, like that. Yeah.
And probably a higher percentage too. Keep in mind they're coming off 3 wins, right? So 6 or less is what it turned out to be, and that might have been pushing 20% last year compared to 8% this year. So I think expectations in general have risen, and it's not just the off season, it's the season, right? It's the offense taking major steps forward. And
I do
such.
Have some breaking news.
Breaking news. Is it good news?
I'd say it's good news for you two right now.
Okay, well, that's
absolutely
good.
For you, Mike and Tony, Midday Chalk is in studio today.
What?
Holy cow.
That is real breaking news.
You described it as good news for us?
It's the way you view it, possibly.
You're saying then we know that we won't have to hang around and do a portion of their program.
Yeah.
I understand why you're saying that, but you have to factor in
the
we
third
have to
hour
be in the room with these people.
They canceled the third hour after just a day.
Unbelievable, man. We stuck, really. We only stuck around for 10 minutes of hour 3 of Jaguars today. That was our big break, Tony, and we let everyone down. We didn't feel prepared. I didn't feel prepared yesterday, so we kid. The boys of the Midday Chalk are coming up in studio here at 1010XL World Headquarters. Coming up next. Thanks to everyone who weighed in on both the poll and also the question of the day, as you do hopefully every single day out there. And if you got a chance, if you're on Twitter and you voted in the poll, go ahead and retweet it. Let's get as many respondents as possible, get a clearer picture. But I think those percentages are going to hold pretty firm no matter if we add another couple hundred more votes or not. I'm going to call that the official record in terms of response during a show to one of our Twitter polls. We'll set the bar right here. I don't know if we've had more. We haven't done many of these polls, Tony. But right now we got 381. So we'll call that the mark. We'll see if we can top with our next one 400, and we'll go from there, man. We'll take over social media. Take over the world. Yes. All right, that does it for us. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping things up. Thanks to all of our sponsors. Thanks to all you listeners out there. Let's all just get along, shall we, and watch the Jags go 19-0 this year. The Midday Chalk coming up next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You know, you always see people making snowballs and stuff. They don't really ever tell you how the snow actually melts and turns into water, and then you're just wet.
You guys have a good day. Peace.